And we're joined by Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports, or Mr. Puck Daddy, as we always affectionately refer to him. I got to tell you that I think, Greg, most fans just assume, most sports fans, not just hockey fans, but most fans just assume that guys are tested for all this. And the fact of the matter is recreational drugs, some of them are specifically not tested for in the NBA. And I believe in Major League Baseball as well, there are drugs that are specifically not tested for. And these are, of course, bargained by the players' associations. I mean, it's true, isn't it? I think most people, Greg, just assume that everything is tested for now.
Yeah, everybody does assume that. And it's clear from the Rick Westhead article yesterday with Bill Daly that the NHL does test the urine samples they collect just to see what's going on in these players' bodies. Mm-hmm. But it's obvious that they haven't collectively bargained to put cocaine and other recreational drugs under the same umbrella as performance-enhancing substances where there'd be anything punitive happening from the league if guys get caught using. But, yeah, I mean, you know, and it's amazing also that people think that every player gets tested or they think that testing happens during the playoffs. And you know, all of these things are assumptions made about a testing policy, at least in the National Hockey League and at least for performance-enhancing drugs. That's been substandard for decades.
Is there anything here that, again, I think sometimes hockey culture, you know, a big part of how we process hockey in this country especially is the sense that there are things that happen in other places that just don't happen in hockey because they're hockey players. You know, there was a lot of denial about the notion that performance-enhancing drugs, which were everywhere, that they would be used. Not, well, hockey players don't use those. Look, they don't look like bodybuilders. They're not doing it. And I think there's been a little bit of resistance in terms of the use of recreational drugs among hockey players. But is there any reason to be surprised that that particular demographic slice of the population would use recreational drugs the way that slice of the population would use them if they weren't playing hockey?
Of course not. But you're essentially right on that head in the sand thing. And I think it's something that we've all kind of come to grips with during this offseason. I mean, if the line is, so Mr. Commissioner, one of your best players is accused of sexual assault. Two players were in DUI accidents, and you have a rampant cocaine problem. Which commissioner do you think I'm talking to? I mean, Gary Bettman's name probably isn't going to jump to the forefront of that list before this summer. But you know, I think that you know the veneer of these are good old boys that you know keep their proverbial noses clean. I think is sort of gone by the wayside, and I don't think anybody should be surprised that young, rich, privileged athletes are going to dabble in this. And, you know, the interesting thing, obviously, isn't that, you know, that someone reported that athletes use coke. I think we've all known that. I mean, Stephen, I've read your books, and Lord knows back in the 80s, a few teams knew how to get down.
I believe so, yes.
It's that the league acknowledged it. I mean, that's the real thing for me, is that Bill Daly comes out and says, we know it's on the rise, and we may have to add it to the substances that we test and then suspend for. And I think that's a real interesting leap. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting leap in the sense that the NHL thinks maybe the problem is rampant enough where they have to mention it and just let these guys know that mom and dad are watching. But, it, you know, and this is just the cynic in me, it's also kind of advantageous for the league to assign blame maybe for some of the health issues that retired players have had.
Yes.
Due to the fact that drugs are rampant in locker rooms.
That's an interesting point, Greg.
And what I also find interesting in this is the suggestion that Donald Fehr and the NHL Players Association, I mean, that they've essentially done some work on their own in sort of trying to figure out just what the extent of the issue is. I would guess more from a public health, it's probably the wrong choice of words, but more from a, from a public health point of view as opposed to a punitive point of view, right? I mean, in other words, okay, if there is a problem here, let's help our members as opposed to let's punish our members, or let's help the NHL punish them. That I find really interesting because I've dealt with Donald Fehr a lot, and it's very much in keeping with what he did in baseball. I mean, Donald Fehr's stance on drug testing in baseball wasn't that he was in favor of performance-enhancing substances. He believed that if you're testing for something, you've got to at least include a corrective element to it, and you've also got to make sure that you don't violate, you know, personal rights.
Right. Right, exactly. And I think that's definitely going to be the PA's approach. I think, you know, they're going to, you know, grab the ground with their fingernails and be kicking and screaming into having recreational drugs become part of the punitive process in the National Hockey League. But I mean, it also kind of speaks to this new awareness of, you know, what guys put their bodies through, not only what they put in their bodies, but also what's done to their bodies. And you read all the stuff that Dan Carcillo wrote, for example, mm-hmm. in Steve Monador's death, and his sort of new awareness on what he wants to do post-retirement and helping players when they leave the league. I think there is this moment now in hockey, partially because of the concussion crisis and just partially because this is where society is, where offering as much help as possible and offering as much treatment as possible is probably the way to go versus, you know, increasing penalties for a guy who tests positive for cocaine use.
Yeah, see, I just, you know, again, what drives me slightly crazy about this stuff is the kind of arbitrary nature of it. The recreational drug that does the most damage in hockey and in the world is alcohol, and it's not even close. Right. It's not even close. But, you know, we tolerate it as a society, and all sports leagues have a pretty strong commercial relationship with the people who produce it. So you're not going to hear about a panic about drinking in hockey or any other sport. But, you know, I just wonder if this is going to turn into a kind of a full and convenient, sometimes for owners, moral panic.
Yeah. But that, I mean, part of that, as you know, is the fact that the Medellin cartel doesn't buy advertising on the Dasher board.
Yeah,
you're never gonna have the same sort of conflict of interest as you have with alcohol. But I mean, I would push it one step further and say that the idea that that we haven't had substantive conversations about the effects of painkillers on these guys, and that being as rampant as cocaine use, it that's a little bit to me disingenuous as well. That, you know, we get a comment from the league about trying to expand drug testing for coke. But at no point are we ever worried about how these guys are basically, you know, self-medicating to the point of no return with painkillers and sometimes amphetamines.
Yeah, see Derek Bogaert. You know,
yeah,
painkillers exactly. And sleeping pills.
And you know, I think we know why. Like we said before, I mean, you have to be kind of cynical about this and understand that when a league is facing lawsuits about the malpractice of some of the doctors that they've worked with vis-a-vis giving these guys painkillers and they shouldn't have them, you know, they can't step up to the plate and be like, we have a problem with it. So they kind of pick and choose their spots. And I think that's what makes people sort of frustrated by that.